This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later on the show, advice for shopping on Black Friday. But first, a recent Wall Street Journal article points out a growing trend among young people. More of them are ditching going to the grocery store in favor of dining out at restaurants and bars. They're also using digital apps to order prepackaged ingredients and recipes and buying prepared meals at convenience stores and supermarkets. And it's not just the millennials doing this, it's also their parents and grandparents. Well, here to talk about that trend and what it means for the future of supermarkets and dining, our research associate at the University of Cincinnati Economic Center, Chris Nysack, and dining blogger and adjunct professor of English at UC Claremont College, Julie Neeson-Gosden. Dining out or grocery store, what's your preference? Let us know, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Julie and Chris, good to see both of you this afternoon.
Great to see you too, Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Give me an overview on this trend. I mean, what's going on? We're spending more and more on restaurants and less and less on grocery stores?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. This same article I think you just mentioned, it also mentioned that this is one of the first times that we've seen food expenditures not at home exceeding those of typical grocery expenditures. How groceries classified, that's a little sticky where you're like Walmart Supercenter, that's not included, or your Whole Foods or Fresh Market style grocery stores, those weren't included. But again, it's the first time that we see your typical grocery store purchases being less than the amount of money people are spending on food at restaurants and bars. So yeah, it's a huge trend.
Absolutely. If you look at the openings of restaurants, whether in Cincinnati or around the country, they're skyrocketing. There's a new restaurant on every corner. They're overall doing fairly well because people really are eating out a lot more, whether that is out of convenience or whether they feel like it's much less expensive to go out and get, you know, a couple of tacos that might cost them $25 to make at home for four people, but you could probably eat them out for a lot less.
So what is driving this? I mean, is it something that's social? Is it financial? Do we know what's leading to this?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. It's primarily preferences. Growing up, you may not have had the option, if you grew up in OTR, to walk around a three-block radius and have Chicago-style hot dogs or tacos, good seafood, I mean, you name it, Vietnamese, whatever you want, you can pretty much get within a walking distance. It's not that the only carryout food available is ordering pizza or Chinese. We can get most everything we want, and when you eat out, the food's not going to go bad in your fridge. So it gives you the option of really having a lot of choice, not having to have a fully stocked pantry, not having to go on Saturdays or Sundays to the grocery store. Pre-planned meals. I mean, absolutely. Yeah.
And if you think about the way America's food attitudes have changed, too, over the past 10 or 20 years, whether that's fueled by the Food Network, going all the way back to Julia Child in the 50s, people are very interested in food. They're interested in where their food comes from, and they're interested in trying all sorts of new food. The Food Network is kind of a spectator sport. It's not like people are, making whatever Ina Garten makes after they finish watching the show. They might go and order something similar at a restaurant. Though.
So, Julia, are we losing touch with the fine art of cooking? Is that what's happening?
I think that people cook more now for special occasions. I eat out a lot, obviously, as a dining blogger, so I can keep up with what's going on for WCPO or whatever. But every once in a while, I'll say, I need to cook something. But it's less I'm going to plan every meal I cook for the week I don't have a family, so that's part of it too, I'm sure. But as is a bit more traditional. I want to cook a meal because I want to cook this, and I fit it into my schedule.
So is there a distinction now when we talk about that people are going to restaurants more often? Is there a distinction between the types of restaurants? I mean, is it a matter of people are going more fast food, or are they going more casual dining, or what are we seeing?
Casual dining, for sure, is a big trend. You see restaurants in the chain area, and The Economist can totally help me with this one. the chain sit-down restaurants tend to not be doing super well, but when you've got chains like Chipotle or Corrido or Panera that are expanding, you can see that people want some quality food, but they don't necessarily want to tip people, or they don't want to be tied down to a dining experience. They want to get something that's good and go on with their day.
Yeah, the fast casual, as you mentioned, those three restaurants, those are, except for Chipotle, they're still facing a little slump from that whole E. coli thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, fast casual.
So if I ask if health had anything to do with this, it may or may not have anything to do with this. Okay.
Right, but yeah, fast casual is a definitely quickly growing food archetype. We are seeing more and more places moving over to that, where instead of going up and getting your fast food and leaving, you go up, you watch the person make your burrito or watch the person make your salad, you take it to the table and you eat. So we are seeing active food preparation when we're ordering food. Mm-hmm. It's not behind the grill or behind a wall where we're not knowing how the food's being made.
You even have hybrid concepts locally, like Maplewood, where you wait in line and you order and you pay and you get a number and your food is brought out to you fairly quickly. It's not quite the, you know, view what you're eating as it's being prepared like that, but it's also not a formal sit-down restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, too, this is something I think we're seeing it particularly among the millennial generation, mm-hmm. but this is something that covers a lot more than just the millennials.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Something I was talking to individuals earlier about was I was curious whether or not there's any relationship between the average age of marriage and the expenditure at restaurant and bars.
Ooh.
It seems there are definitely two sides
That's
of the argument.
That's a good economist question.
Yeah, that really is.
Yeah, there are two sides. When you have a partner or you're married, you definitely have a higher chance of having expendable income to mm-hmm. spend at restaurants or bars. But you also may eat at home more just out of a cultural acclimation or less of a need to go out to meet people at restaurants or bars, whereas if you're single and have expendable income, you may go out to a restaurant or a bar because you're probably not going to meet somebody in your kitchen. So,
yeah, and I keep looking at this as being driven a lot by convenience because I look at both of my sons and their spouses, and they're in that millennial generation, and both couples eat out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're all pressed for time these days, so I would think that convenience would just be a huge factor in this.
Yeah, and when I can be at my apartment and hop on my phone and order fast or food from 15 different restaurants and have it delivered to me by a guy on a bike,
mm-hmm.
I think that speaks a lot to the cultural availability of food on the go.
I remember, I've written about this several times, that for a long time there's a dearth of delivery, especially downtown. You know, when you go into a city like New York or Chicago and you can get literally anything delivered at almost any time of day, that was something that Cincinnati didn't have. But I would say in the past 2 years or so, mm-hmm. With things like OrderUp and Grubhub and 53T, and these delivery services, or even now Uber Eats will deliver food to you. Things have really changed, and we're kind of a grown-up city now. Kind of nice.
What about the baby boomers who are now empty nesters? Mm-hmm. Are they more inclined to eat out than they are to dine, to cook at home?
Yeah. I remember talking to people about Liberty Township or Liberty Center, for example, the mm-hmm. new development,
mm-hmm.
How most of their renters or purchasers of the condos, they're not the millennials. They're your empty nesters that want that kind of urban light living style mm-hmm. where you can walk to where you want to eat, walk to where you want to shop, and stay in your within kind of somewhat walkable neighborhood, yeah.
And if you even think about the way new construction is going, with either rehabs of condos, say, in over the Rhine, or new construction, no one's building dining rooms. Like, you mm-hmm. can't really get – I don't have a dining room. I've got an island in my kitchen. I don't know a lot of people who have dining rooms anymore, if you think about it, at least in an apartment and condo living. And I see, you know, my mother, who lives by herself in her house. I don't think she's used her dining room in like 15 years. I think it stores things mostly these days. But she's going out a lot more, too, because she doesn't want to cook for just one person. And she doesn't want to eat the same thing, you know, for 3 days as leftovers.
So what's that? Wasn't there a commercial where somebody says, so this is the dining room or something like that? I seem to remember that sticks in my head. That's funny, though, that people are, you know, if you grew up in my generation, dining room was you know, a common thing.
Yeah.
Families sat
mm-hmm.
down and they had dinner every night, and it's just becoming so less and less common.
Mm-hmm.
I know in my own household, if we use our dining room a couple times a year, it's amazing.
Yeah. That's Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter.
Yeah.
And maybe as a desk.
Yeah. throwing your mail on there.
Sure.
Just sort through it later. How far back does this shift go? When do we start noticing this?
We were just talking about this before we went on the air and talking about convenience foods in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. If you think about Campbell's soup and Spam and, you know, Kraft macaroni and cheese.
TV dinners.
Oh, absolutely TV dinners. Yeah. And think about how that was a really affordable, accessible luxury. You know, even at that point, you still had a lot of mothers who stayed at home and weren't working. But it was seen as a status symbol to be able to buy a banquet or encore dinner or, you know, get all these foods that are canned. They were marketed as healthier options, and marketing really came in there. There's a book, I actually just looked it up beforehand, called A Second Helping that talks about that that whole evolution into these pre-produced foods, which is definitely continued today.
Yeah, and you talked about 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. When we look back at the amount of hours a household worked per week, the amount of hours individuals worked really hasn't gone up, but for combined household hours, it's gone up from about 50 hours in 50s, 60s to almost 70 hours today.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen a huge growth in the number of hours that households are working per week, which may also be a reason that people are eating out more.
We're more pressed for time these days.
Right.
Yeah. How much would you say, Chris, that improving economic circumstances have contributed to this trend?
Oh, absolutely. People see that you can eat at home and you can eat your lentils and rice and get your complete protein, and that's you can live on that. But if you have that expendable income, you can combine that with your entertainment mm-hmm. and two for one. You can go out with friends, have a nice dinner, still get your food and go home. But yeah, I'd say the recovery from post-recession has had a lot to do with the amount we've been going out, but like Julie said, this is not a new trend in the past 4 years. This has been going on for the last 30, 40, 50 years mm-hmm. of our greater reliance on eating out.
Yeah, and if you take that, you know, in the 40s, 50s with the encore dinners, and now there's a little bit of a stigma around getting these pre-packaged, pre-processed foods. So instead, we've transitioned into fresh foods that have been prepared. So whether that's a rotisserie chicken or cut up butternut squash at Whole Foods, or you know, basically full dinners that you can get at Kroger or Meijer or I'm not sure if Walmart does it or not, but you can buy basically entire meals that feel a little bit fresher.
Some of them are actually pretty good.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I mean, I love me a rotisserie chicken. They're mm-hmm. really good.
Or the Whole Foods hot bar.
Oh yeah, the Whole Foods hot bar. Absolutely.
Plug.
How does this jive with the whole local food slow movement, especially among millennials?
Oh, that's a great question. It does and it doesn't. People are very, very concerned about where they get food, whether that is going to Whole Foods where you can find out where everything is from or shopping at a market like Findlay Market. And people do that. And people are really looking at restaurants and where they're sourcing food as well. A lot of restaurants locally are very proud of where they source their food from and will very happily advertise it. Even a Chipotle style restaurant will tell you, you know, that they got their pork from Nyman Ranch, or their vegetables are local when they're in season. So there's, you know, a certain amount of making sure that people know where the food comes from, but then that also gets balanced out with cost and convenience, I think.
Yeah, and places like a Five Guys, they tell you where those potatoes are from. So it is a pride point to have that local mm-hmm. element in their offerings. But yeah, I'd say most people that I know, they do care about what they eat mm-hmm. and where it's from. Yeah.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. We're talking about the trend of favoring dining out over grocery shopping. And joining us this afternoon, Associate Director of Research at the University of Cincinnati Economic Center, Chris Nysack, and dining writer for WCPO.com and adjunct professor of English at UC Claremont College, Julie Neeson-Gosden. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. We got an email from Drew, and he was asking if this is a lasting trend or if this is more of a pendulum swing at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Of course, only time can tell, but I'd say based on where we're going and based on kind of the speed of the trend, I don't see it returning anytime soon. It may level off mm-hmm. because we have had, I have no idea how many new restaurant starts in the last year in the city of Cincinnati.
I've lost count.
But yeah, so I don't see restaurants, the number of restaurants reducing anytime soon, but I could definitely foresee that the growth is going to slow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's also the idea that it's hard to go back when you don't know how to cook. So if you've got people who are used to eating out and used to getting these convenience foods, I imagine that at some point there will be a trend in people cooking more at home. But it's going to take a while because those are skills that you have to reacquire.
Do you see this, Julie, as our palates are becoming more sophisticated.
Absolutely.
We want things that we can't necessarily cook at home. We
right.
just can't quite figure out how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very, very interesting to see the change in ingredients over the years. And people are looking for foods with more exotic ingredients, more interesting ingredients. I mean, 10 years ago, you never saw a sunchoke on a menu, and now they're all over the place. But people look at a sunchoke and go, how in the world do I cook that? So they let someone else do it. Something like cooking Thai food, which I love to do. But if you open up my pantry, I look like I'm Saigon Market with all of the ingredients that I have. And that can be really daunting for someone who just wants to start out. So sometimes it's just easier to say, you know what, I'm just going to get some takeout.
Yeah, especially we talked about the cost mm-hmm. issues.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When you want to stock your pantry for overall cooking, not bad, maybe $50. But when you want to stock your pantry to be able to cook Vietnamese mm-hmm. food, French, Italian, and a bunch of different genres, yeah, that's going to add up.
And that's just the non-perishable or refrigeratable stuff. That mm-hmm. doesn't count things like fresh herbs, meats, vegetables that when, you know, you maybe need two sprigs of scallions or something and the rest of them go bad. I can't tell you how many times I've done that.
Yeah, and we talk about how people don't necessarily know how to cook now and they'd right. rather go out for convenience, but the amount of resources we mm-hmm. have to learn how to cook,
mm-hmm.
we have the internet, we have the cooking channel, mm-hmm. food channel, there are probably 30 different episodes or TV shows on different channels mm-hmm. that really offer you step by step, this is how to cook things. Yet we see the amount of people cooking going back and then people get scared. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like information overload.
Yeah.
You brought up second helping earlier, but Michael Pollan.
Oh, yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
Early 2000s, Omnivore's Dilemma. I'd say that is when one of the big kind of food awakenings, at least in my world, really started. Somebody introducing the supply chain of fresh food,
mm-hmm.
and it goes from the ocean and here and here and here. And yeah, I think that idea that food has a pathway and we don't just go to the market to get food, but we have a better understanding of where it came from. So how do you think that, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Another book that just came out, I believe, in July. In fact, I heard about it here, was Real Food, Fake Food. And that basically takes Michael Pollan's work and takes it an extra step and shows how people are basically taking balsamic vinegar, for example, and making it fake because it's because people want high quality, but they don't actually know what to look for. Or even restaurants, they cite Bappo in New York. They had a Parmigiano Reggiano expert, which is what I really want to be. and they had her at the table, and the waiter came out and would you like some Parmesan on your pasta? And they'd say that. And the Parmigiano expert said, would you bring out the Parmesan for me? And they ran back and got some piece from the back of the restaurant that had been there for a long time because they were using Grana Padano, which is less expensive, still delicious. But if you're saying, you know, you're using this one ingredient, you want to be sure that you've got that, which is real. And people really want that. But then if they're not cooking their own food, how do they know that they're getting it?
Yeah.
So it's a real dichotomy in what we think and what we're actually doing.
Julie, what about the growth in delivery services?
Oh, sure. That actually goes back to the you need one scallion and then you've got the rest of the bunch left. There are a bunch of services. I actually took about a month a couple of years ago and tried all of them. They basically send you a recipe. They send you a protein. They send you the vegetables, spices, down to little tiny jars of mayonnaise and little tiny bottles of vinegar. And then you cut them up. You cut up all of your food. You follow the instructions. For a skilled cook, I would say it takes about 25 minutes. For someone who is less skilled, probably 45. And they deliver it to your door every week. You can pick what you want. I know anecdotally, I see a lot of the boxes on the back of the FedEx truck that parks near my house. I certainly get them every once in a while. And even then, it's basically for busy people who don't want to go to the grocery store and don't want to waste food. But if you get three meals a week and something comes up, you still end up wasting. Or if you forget to cancel when you're out of town, you still end up wasting. And they've got a lot of problems. There are a couple of these delivery services that are having major issues with supply chain and E. coli and tracking down where this food is coming from when people are getting sick too. So it has some of the same problems that are inherent in a restaurant, but delivered to your house.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, sure. The cost structure is about $8 a serving?
It's between 8 and 12, depending on which one. Blue Apron is about 10, Plated is about 12, HelloFresh, I think, is probably more in the $8 or $9 range.
513-419-7100 to join us, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And Stavra from Mount Lookout joins us now. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm actually a physician at Cincinnati Children's, and I run a program for kids that struggle with the consequences of overweight and obesity. So one of the things we always tell our families is try to minimize the time you spend eating out. And I realize that there's an increasing choice of restaurants, you know, some are healthier than others. But even at some of the healthier restaurants and the fresher restaurants, and I like to eat out too, some of the foods are, you know, high in fat, high in salt, even sugar, added sugars, and they're sometimes subtly hidden. So I just wonder if the panel has any thoughts on that. Will this increase frequency of eating out, takeout, even at places marketed as healthier or fresher, will that have unintended consequences on kind of population health?
Yeah, I think that absolutely could. That's a great question. I love unintended consequences just to discuss. So when you go to a place and it says this is locally raised or it's organic or farm fresh or grass-fed only, not many of those words actually mean anything.
Nope.
It's just marketing. When you go to a fresh or a healthy cooking restaurant, you still might be eating a quarter stick of butter with your chicken breast.
Right.
I think that's something definitely to take into account. And when you cook at home, you're not nearly as likely to use as much fat or salt maybe as you would eating out. But I think something else within that question is the fact that processed food usually contains much, much, much more fat and salt and sugar than anything either prepared at a restaurant or in a home.
And then don't forget about restaurant portion size as well. When you're getting into the quick service or fast casual restaurants, the portion sizes are very generous. Yeah, absolutely huge. As somebody who eats for a living, I've certainly, you know, suffered some unintended consequences that took a little time to adjust with diet and exercise. But I think that with the propensity now for restaurants to clearly label what they have, it's a lot easier to say, you know, can you please, you know, eliminate a certain ingredient because you know it's there. So, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I get a turkey burger without a bun, you know, that sort of thing, to cut back on calories. And having portions is, sharing an entree with someone, your partner or your friend, makes things a little bit easier as well as far as making sure that you don't eat too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just talking before I came down, but how a lot of us, when we go out to eat, we plan on what we're getting that night to have lunch the next day.
Yeah, for sure.
So you may modify your entree choice for something that's easier to reheat. But, yeah.
Let's talk with Teresa in Westchester. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
I had a comment. Earlier you were talking about the packages from HelloFresh and Blue Apron. I do damages for a supply chain, and a lot of times those packages will come in and the chicken or beef, some of the raw meat has leaked on the rest of the fresh vegetables that are just placed in those menu packs.
Mm-hmm.
I always discard anything that would possibly have any, you know, chicken juice on it, but other employees that don't either notice it or know the procedure may send them on. That may be where the E. coli is coming from. So my comment was just really about the safety of it and also the way the companies that ship it package it. If they would just, you know, package the meat better or have the other fresh vegetables not just in their open, that may solve some of the problems.
And they've really changed their packaging over the past couple of years, too, which I think is very helpful. There's I've used plated a little bit lately, and they will double bag their proteins.
Are they vacuum sealed? Or
So the product itself is vacuum sealed, and then they will put a pretty high quality plastic Ziploc bag around it. And they put the meat on the bottom with a liner and then an ice and then the fresh ingredients on top of it, which I think helps quite a bit. But I will certainly say that I've seen leaky stuff in the boxes, and thankfully they're pretty good customer service wise, and they'll, you know, replace anything that doesn't look good or has leaked, or give you a credit. But I could definitely see someone who maybe is not as aware of what those consequences are or how to handle these products might end up in a little bit of trouble because of it. And that is whether that's the person packing it or the person ultimately using it.
And Julie, restaurants are they're inspected. They can face fines.
Yep.
What about the delivery companies? Do they face the same set of standards?
I don't think that they do. I'm sure that their facilities would have to be inspected, but they're not going to get the same kind of inspection that a restaurant would.
So we talked about how restaurants are taking up more and more of the supermarket grocery store business. How are grocery stores responding to this?
We actually see some food deflation within grocery stores. So food is getting cheaper at grocery stores relative to all their things that we buy. So the CPI for food has been going down, which is generally really good for consumers. But it's not as good for the grocers or the farmers. So if you're not able to sell 5 pounds of potatoes or onions for as much today as you could 3 years ago, that may affect how many things you can grow or how you're going to be able to continue your business. You may have to switch from a commodity crop to a more high price or luxury good, which ultimately could lead to a shortage of the staples.
And from food perspective, when we get used to things like paying $3 a pound for chicken breasts, you're not getting a chicken that lived a happy life, you know, pecking and running around on a farm. You're getting a factory farm chicken, which has some health issues for us, whether that is antibiotics or even just what those factory farms do to the water and the ground area around their farms. But it also isn't great for the animals, too, and people are really concerned about that sort of thing. But they get sticker shock when they find out how much a locally raised, ethically raised chicken or cow or pig costs. It's astronomically higher because you're getting the actual costs and there isn't any sort of they're not taking a loss on it. You can't as a small farm.
Well, Chris and Julie, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Associate Director of Research at the University of Cincinnati Economic Center, Chris Nysack, and dining writer for WCPO.com and adjunct professor of English at UC Claremont College, Julie Neeson-Gosden. Coming up, we'll have tips for dealing with Black Friday and Cyber Monday, and in Focus on Technology, the connection between the mind and your knee. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.